Star Wars, Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn, concluded. Cassette number 12, side 2. Yes, Counselor, Virgilio acknowledged. And speaking for myself, Senator Bel Iblis, I'm delighted to have you along. Thank you, Captain, Bel Iblis said. And in her mind's eye, Leia could see the other's famous smile. Let's do some damage, shall we? Peregrine out. The six dreadnoughts had moved into encirclement formation around the Star Destroyer now, smothering it with a flood of ion cannon fire, and ignoring the increasingly sporadic turbolaser blasts raking them in return. Mara's right, though, Carda said, stepping close to Leia. As soon as we can get the tech team off that ship, we'd better get them and run. Leia shook her head. We can't just leave the Katana fleet to the Empire. Carda snorted. I take it you haven't had a chance to count how many dreadnoughts are left out there. Leia frowned. No, why? I did a scan, Carda said grimly. Earlier, when you were arguing with Phalia, out of the original 200 Katana ships, there are 15 left. Leia stared at him. 15? She breathed. Carda nodded. I'm afraid I underestimated the Grand Admiral, Counselor, he said, an edge of bitterness seeping in beneath the studied urbanity of his voice. I knew that once he had the location of the fleet, he would start moving the ships away from here, but I didn't expect him to get the location from Hoffner this quickly. Leia shivered. She'd undergone an Imperial interrogation herself once. Years later, the memory was still vivid. I wonder if there's anything left of him. Save your sympathy, Carda advised. In retrospect, it seems unlikely that Thrawn needed to bother with anything so uncivilized as coercion. For Hoffner to have talked so freely implies the Grand Admiral simply applied a large infusion of cash. Leia gazed out at the battle, the dark feeling of failure settling over her. They'd lost. After all their efforts, they'd lost. She took a deep breath, running through the Jedi relaxation exercises. Yes, they'd lost, but it was just a battle, not the war. The Empire might have taken the Dark Force, but recruiting and training crewers to man all those dreadnoughts would take years. A lot could happen in that time. You're right, she told Carda. We'd do best to cut our losses. Captain Virgilio, as soon as those TIE fighters have been neutralized, I want a landing party sent to the Katana to assist our tech team there. There was no reply. Captain? Virgilio was staring out the bridge viewport, his face carved from stone. Too late, Counselor, he said quietly. Leia turned to look. There, moving toward the besieged Imperial ship, a second Star Destroyer had suddenly emerged from hyperspace. The Imperial's backup had arrived. Pull out, Avis shouted, his voice starting to sound ragged. All ships pull out. Second Star Destroyer in system. The last word was half drowned out by the clang of the Z-95's proximity warning as something got entirely too close. Mara threw the little ship into a sideways skid, just in time to get out of a TIE fighter's line of fire. Pull out where? She demanded, turning her skid into a barely controlled spin that had the effect of killing her forward velocity. Her attacker, perhaps made overconfident by the appearance of the backup force, roared by too fast for more than a wild shot in her direction. Coolly, Mara blew him out of the sky. In case you've forgotten, some of us don't have enough computing power aboard to calculate a safe hyperspace jump. I'll feed you the numbers, Avis said. Carda? I agree. Carda's voice came from the escort frigate. Get out of here. Mara clenched her teeth, glancing up at the second Star Destroyer. She hated to turn tail and run, but she knew they were right. Bel-Iblis had shifted three of his ships to meet the new threat, but even equipped with ion cannon, three dreadnoughts couldn't hold down a Star Destroyer for long. If they didn't disengage soon, they might not get another chance. Abruptly, her danger sense tingled. Again, she threw the Z-95 into a skid, but this time she was too late. The ship lurched hard, and from behind her came the hissing scream of superheated metal vaporizing into space. "I'm hit," she snapped, one hand automatically slapping cutoff switches as the other grabbed for her flight suit's helmet seals and fastened them in place. Just in time. A second hiss, cut off almost before it began, announced the failure of cabin integrity. "Power lost, air lost, ejecting now." She reached for the eject loop and paused. By chance, or perhaps last-second instinct, her crippled fighter was aimed almost directly at the first Star Destroyer's hangar entry port. If she could coax a little more power out of the auxiliary maneuvering system. It took more than a little coaxing. But when she finally gripped the eject loop again, she had the satisfaction of knowing that even in death, the Z-95 would take a minor bit of revenge on the Empire's war machine. Not much, but a little. She pulled down on the loop, and an instant later was slammed hard into her seat as explosive bolts blew the canopy clear and catapulted her out of the ship. She got a quick glimpse of the Star Destroyer's portside edge, an even quicker glimpse of a TIE fighter whipping past. And suddenly, there was an agonized squeal from the ejection seat's electronics and the violent crackle of arcing circuits. And with a horrible jolt, Mara realized that she had made what might very well be the last mistake of her life. Intent on aiming her crippled Z-95 at the Star Destroyer's hangar bay, she had drifted too close to the giant ship and ejected directly into the path of the dreadnought's ion beam bombardment. And in that single crackle of tortured electronics, she had lost everything. Her comm, her lights, her limited maneuvering jets, her life support regulator, her emergency beacons. Everything. For a second, her thoughts flickered to Skywalker. He'd been lost in deep space, too, a while back. But she'd had a reason to find him. No one had a similar reason to find her. A flaming TIE fighter roared past her and exploded. A large piece of shrapnel glanced off the ceramic armor that wrapped partially around her shoulders, slamming her head hard against the side of the headrest. And as she fell into blackness, she saw the Emperor's face before her and knew that she had again failed him. They were approaching the monitor anteroom just behind the Katana's bridge when Luke abruptly jerked. "What?" Han snapped, looking quickly around down the corridor behind them. "It's Mara," the other said, his face tight. "She's in trouble." "Hit?" Han asked. "Hit and lost," Luke said, forehead straining in concentration. "She must have run into one of the ion beams." The kid was looking like he'd just lost his best friend instead of someone who wanted to kill him. Han thought about pointing that out, decided at the last second they had more immediate things to worry about. Probably just one of those crazy Jedi things that never made sense anyway. "Well, we can't help her now," he said, starting forward again. "Come on." Both the starboard and port main corridors fed into the monitor anteroom, from which a single set of blast doors led the rest of the way forward into the bridge proper. Lando and Chewbacca were at opposite sides of the port corridor entranceway as Han and Luke arrived, huddling back from a barrage of laser fire and occasionally risking a quick shot back. "What have you got, Lando?" Han asked as he and Luke joined them. "Nothing good, buddy," Lando grunted back. "There are at least 10 of them left. Shen and Tomris were both hit. Shen will probably die if we don't get him to a medic droid in the next hour or so. Anselm and Klein are taking care of them inside the bridge. We did a little better, but we've still got a couple of them coming up behind us, Anne told him, doing a quick assessment of the rows of monitor consoles in the anteroom. They would provide reasonable cover, but given the layout, the defenders wouldn't be able to retreat farther without opening themselves to enemy fire. I don't think four of us can hold this place, he decided. We'd better pull back to the bridge. From which there's nowhere else to go, Lando pointed out. I trust you considered that part. Beside him, Han felt Luke brace himself. All right, Luke said. Into the bridge, all of you. I'll handle this. Lando threw him a look. You'll what? I'll handle it, Luke repeated. With a sharp snap hiss, he ignited his lightsaber. Get going. I know what I'm doing. Come on, Han seconded. He didn't know what Luke had in mind, but something about the kid's face suggested it wouldn't be a good idea to argue. We can backstop him from inside. A minute later, they were set. Han and Lando just inside the bridge blast doors. Chewbacca a few meters farther in under cover of an engineering console. Luke standing alone in the archway with lightsaber humming. It took another minute for the Imperials to realize that they had the corridors to themselves. But once they did, they moved swiftly. Cover fire began ricocheting around the monitor consoles. And as it did so, the Imperials began diving one by one through the two corridor archways into the anteroom, taking cover behind the long consoles and adding their contribution to the laser firestorm. Trying not to wince back from the attack, Han kept up his own fire, knowing full well that he wasn't doing much more than making noise. Luke's lightsaber flashed like something alive and hungry, deflecting the bolts that came too close. So far, the kid didn't seem to have been hit, but Han knew that it couldn't last. As soon as the Imperials stopped laying down random cover fire and started concentrating on their aim, there would be too many shots for even a Jedi to stay clear of. Gritting his teeth, wishing he knew what Luke had in mind, he kept shooting. Ready, Luke shouted over the screaming of the bolts. And even as Han wondered what he was supposed to be ready for, the kid took a step back and threw his lightsaber to the side. It spiraled across the anteroom, spun into the wall, and, with a crack like thunder, sliced the anteroom open to space. Luke leaped backwards, barely making it into the bridge before the blast doors slammed shut against the explosive decompression. Alarms whistled for a moment until Chewbacca shut them off. And for another minute, Han could hear the thudding of laser fire as the doomed Imperials fired uselessly at the blast doors. And then the firing trailed off into silence. And it was all over. Luke was already at the main viewport, gazing out at the battle taking place outside. Take it easy, Luke, Han advised, holstering his blaster and coming up behind him. We're out of the fight. We can't be, Luke insisted, his artificial right hand opening and closing restlessly. Maybe remembering Mirker and that long trek with Mara across the forest. We've got to do something to help. The Imperials will kill everyone if we don't. We can't fire and we can't maneuver, Han growled, fighting back his own feeling of helplessness. Leia was on that escort frigate out there. What's left? Luke waved a hand helplessly. I don't know, he conceded. You're supposed to be the clever one. You think of something. Yeah, Han muttered, looking around the bridge. Sure, I'm supposed to just wave my hands and... He stopped short and felt a slow, lopsided smile spread across his face. Chewie, Lando, get over there to those sensor displays, he ordered, looking down at the console in front of him. Not the right one. Luke, help me find... Never mind, here it is. Here what is? Lando asked, stepping in front of the display Han had indicated. Think about it a minute, Han said, glancing over the controls. Good. Everything still seemed to be engaged. He just hoped it all still worked. Where are we, anyway? He added, stepping over to the helm console and activating it. We're in the middle of nowhere, Lando said with strained patience, and fiddling with that helm isn't going to get us anywhere. You're right, Han agreed, smiling tightly. It's not going to get us anywhere. Lando stared at him, and slowly a smile of his own appeared. Right, he said slyly. Right. This is the Katana fleet, and we're aboard the Katana. You got it, Han told him. Taking a deep breath, mentally crossing his fingers, he eased power to the drive. The Katana didn't move, of course. But the whole reason the entire Katana fleet had disappeared together in the first place... Got one, Lando called out, hunching over his sensor display. Bearing 43 Mark 20. Just one? Han asked. Just one, Lando confirmed. Count your blessings. After this much time, we're lucky to have even one ship whose engines still work. Let's hope they stay working, Han grunted. Give me an intercept course for that second Star Destroyer. Lando frowned. Come around 15 degrees portside and down a hair. Right. Carefully, Han made the necessary course change. It was a strange feeling to be flying another ship by slave rig remote control. How's that? He asked Lando. Looks good, Lando confirmed. Give it a little more power. The fire control monitors aren't working, Luke warned, stepping to Han's side. I don't know if you're going to be able to fire accurately without them. I'm not even going to try, Han told him grimly. Lando? Shift a little more to port side, Lando directed. A little more. That's it. He looked up at Han. You're lined up perfectly. Here goes, Han said, and threw the throttle control wide open. There was no way the Star Destroyer could have missed seeing the dreadnought bearing down on it, of course, but with its electronic and control systems still being scrambled by Bel Iblis's ion attack, there was also no way for it to move out of the way in time. Even from the Katana's distance, the impact and explosion were pretty spectacular. Han watched the expanding fireball fade slowly, and then turned to Luke. Okay, he said. Now we're out of the fight. From the Judicator's side viewport, Captain Brandeis watched in stunned disbelief as the peremptory died its fiery death. No, it couldn't be. It simply couldn't. Not an Imperial Star Destroyer. Not the mightiest ship in the Empire's fleet. The crack of a shot against the bridge deflector screen snapped him out of it. Report, he snapped. One of the enemy dreadnoughts seems to have been damaged in the peremptory's explosion, the sensor officer reported. The other two are on their way back here to reinforce the three still blasting away with their ion cannon. Brandeis gave the tactical display a quick check, but it was a meaningless exercise. He knew full well what their only course was. Recall all remaining fighters, he ordered. We'll make the jump to light speed as soon as they're aboard. Yes, sir. And as the bridge crew moved to comply, Brandeis permitted himself a tight smile. Yes, they'd lost this one, but it was just a battle, not the war. They'd be back soon enough. And when they did, it would be with the Dark Force and Grand Admiral Thrawn to command it. So he would leave the rebels to enjoy their victory here. It might well be their last. Chapter 29, The Last Chapter. The repair party from the Quenfus got the anteroom hull breach patched in what was probably record time. The ship Luke had requested was waiting for him in the docking bay, and he was out in space again barely an hour after the destruction of the second Star Destroyer and the retreat of the first. Locating a single inert ejection seat among all the debris of battle had been nearly a hopeless task for Karda's people. For a Jedi, it was no trick at all. Mara was unconscious when they found her, both from a dangerously depleted air supply and from what was probably a mild concussion. Aves got her aboard the Wild Karda and set off at near reckless speed toward the medical facilities of the Star Cruiser, which had finally arrived. Luke saw them safely aboard, then headed back toward the Katana and the transport he and the rest of his team would be returning to Coruscant by. Wondering why it had been so important for him to rescue Mara in the first place. He didn't know. There were lots of rationalizations he could come up with, from simple gratitude for her assistance in the battle, all the way up to the saving of lives being a natural part of a Jedi's duty. But none of them was more than simply a rationalization. All he knew for certain was that he had had to do it. Maybe it was the guidance of the Force. Maybe it was just one last gasp of youthful idealism and naivete. From the board in front of him, the comm pinged. Luke? Yes, Han, what is it? Get back here to the Katana, right away. Luke looked out his canopy at the dark ship ahead, a shiver running through him. Han's voice had been that of someone walking through a graveyard. What is it? Trouble, the other said. I know what the Empire's up to now, and it's not good. Luke swallowed. I'll be right there. So, Thrawn said, his glowing eyes blazing with cold fire as he looked up from the Judicator's report. Thanks to your insistence on delaying me, we've lost the peremptory. I trust you're satisfied. Kabauth met the gaze evenly. Don't blame the incompetence of your would-be conquerors on me, he said, his voice as icy as Thrawn's. Or perhaps it wasn't incompetence, but the skill of the rebellion. Perhaps it would be you lying dead now if the Chimera had gone instead. Thrawn's face darkened. Pelion eased a half-step closer to the Grand Admiral, moving a little farther into the protective sphere of the Isalamir beside the command chair, and braced himself for the explosion. But Thrawn had better control than that. Why are you here? He asked instead. Kabauth smiled and turned deliberately away. You've made many promises to me since you first arrived on Wayland, Grand Admiral Thrawn, he said, pausing to peer at one of the hologram sculptures scattered around the room. I'm here to make sure those promises are kept. And how do you intend to do that? By making certain that I'm too important to be, shall we say, conveniently forgotten, Cabal said. I'm hereby informing you, therefore, that I will be returning to Wayland, and will be assuming command of your Mount Tantis project. Pelion felt his throat tighten.
The Mount Tantis project? Thrawn asked evenly.
Yes, Cabal said, smiling again as his eyes flicked to Pelion. Oh, I know about it, Captain, despite your petty efforts to conceal the truth from me.
We wish to spare you unnecessary discomfort, Thrawn assured him. Unpleasant memories, for example, that the project might bring to mind.
Kabauth studied him,
Perhaps you did, he conceded, with only a touch of sarcasm. If that was truly your motive, I thank you. But the time for such things has passed. I have grown in power and ability since I left Wayland, Grand Admiral Thrawn. I no longer need you to care for my sensitivities. He drew himself up to his full height, and when he spoke again, his voice boomed and echoed throughout the room. I am Kabaoth, Jedi Master. The force which binds the galaxy together is my servant. Slowly, Thrawn rose to his feet. And you are my servant, he said. Kabaoth shook his head. Not anymore, Grand Admiral Thrawn. The circle has closed. The Jedi will rule again. Take care, Kabaoth, Thrawn warned. Posture all you wish, but never forget that even you are not indispensable to the Empire. Kabaoth's bushy eyebrows lifted, and the smile which creased his face sent an icy shiver through Pelion's chest. It was the same smile he remembered from Wayland, the smile that had first convinced him that Kabaoth was indeed insane. On the contrary, the Jedi Master said softly, as of now, I am all that is not indispensable to the Empire. He lifted his gaze to the stars displayed on the room's walls. Come, he said, let us discuss the new arrangement of our empire. Luke looked down at the bodies of the Imperial troops who had died in his sudden decompression of the Katana's bridge anteroom, understanding at last why they'd felt strange to his mind. I don't suppose there's any chance of a mistake, he heard himself say. Beside him, Han shrugged. Leia's got them doing a genetic check, but I don't think so. Luke nodded, staring down at the faces laid out before him, or rather, at the single face that was shared by all of the bodies. Clones. So that's it, he said quietly. Somewhere the Empire's found a set of Sperti cloning cylinders and has gotten them working. Which means it's not going to take them years to find and train crews for their new dreadnoughts, Han said, his voice grim. Maybe only a few months. Maybe not even that long. Luke took a deep breath. I've got a really bad feeling about this, Han. Yeah. Join the club. To be concluded. This concludes the reading of Star Wars, Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn. This book was read by Larry A. McKeever. Additional titles in the Star Wars trilogy by Timothy Zahn in the Books on Tape library include Heir to the Empire and The Last Command. For additional information about them or for help with topics of related interest, please call our customer service department or check our catalog index to find review material. This audiobook may be purchased by you and donated to your local library for your friends and neighbors to enjoy. Such a donation qualifies as a write-off for tax purposes. Books on Tape Incorporated produces many new unabridged audiobook titles each month. Please call our friendly operators toll-free at 1-800-88-BOOKS for information about our service, or to set up a library donation, or to speed your next title to you without delay. Would you please wind or rewind the tape as appropriate so the book will be in order for the next person to enjoy? Thank you.